My voice comes out a little gravelly. Ruby's head snaps around mid-giggle. She loves playing under... I wonder what my expression must be for the words to die on her tongue like that. The sheets. I finish for her, my voice still too low. I know. She looks around and then down, maybe realizing where she is. Her eyes go comically wide and she pulls the sheet back, scooping up Francesca and scrambling off the bed. I'm sorry, that wasn't... She gestures to my bed. I didn't mean to. I put her down so I could manage the cage latch and then we started playing. I let her ramble for a couple more seconds before I crack a smile. It's fine, you're good. It's one of her favorite places to hide. Well, it's such a big bed and there's so much room to play. I'm not sure if she means it the way my brain interprets it. Ruby carries Francesca over to the cage, her shorts still riding high on one side. Half of her left ass cheek is on display. It's a very nice ass cheek. I'd like to get my hands on it or sink my teeth into it. I really need to get a handle on myself, and I plan to, later, when I'm alone in this room and she's locked away in hers. I follow Ruby to the cage and watch as she latches it to make sure it's done properly. There have been a couple of occasions in which I've mistakenly thought I'd locked it, but hadn't. Francesca likes warm, cozy places, something else she and my dick have in common. The difference being, if she escapes from her cage, she's likely to find a hiding place I can't easily retrieve her from. There we go, Ruby says softly as she lowers Francesca into the cage. Do you ever let her sleep with you? Not typically. She's hard to find in the morning, and I can't have her roaming while I'm at work. She's ended up under the covers with me in the middle of the night because I've fallen asleep while watching TV. She has a few choice places she likes to sleep, and since I'm not a big fan of boxers, it was a bit of a shock the first time it happened. Since then, I've taken to wearing boxers if I let her sleep with me, since she seems to have a bit of a fascination with things that dangle. I imagine that wouldn't be very good. It's okay because of the ferret proofing I've done, but I still don't want to invite mischief if it's unnecessary. No one likes mischief. Ruby gives me a wide smile that says exactly the opposite. I'm starving. Let's see if I can keep food down. And off she goes, practically dancing her way down the hall. She doesn't wait for me to make it back to the kitchen. I check the latch one more time just to be safe. When I get there, all the containers are open and she already has a fork in one. She twirls it, gathering noodles. It's a massive amount. She tips her head back, opens wide, and shoves the entire thing in her mouth, making sounds that I would definitely not isolate to food enjoyment. She groans and turns to me, puts her hand in front of her mouth, and says, "This is so good." "So you like it, then?" I grab a fork and load up a plate, handing her one so she doesn't feel compelled to eat out of the box. She takes it, her cheeks coloring pink as she continues to chew the huge mouthful. She loads her plate. I'm surprised by the amount of food she piles on, considering her size, but I don't say anything. I like a woman with a healthy appetite. Once we're loaded up with food, she slides into the chair beside me. "Wine?" I gesture to the open bottles on the counter. "White, maybe?" She looks uncertain. "Don't feel obligated." "I don't." When I raise a brow, she brings her fingers up, Girl Scout style. "Promise, no obligations. I just haven't had any alcohol since I became the Vomitron last week." "Vomitron?" "It's my superhero name. Not very badass, but rather fitting, all things considered." We eat in silence for a few minutes. I'm starving. I haven't had anything to eat since breakfast, so I could probably plow through 2 or 3 entrees no problem, but I try to scale it back so I don't come across as uncivilized. Ruby makes an uncomfortable noise. "I think I took too much." "Your eyes are bigger than your stomach," I observe. She's only managed to get through half the contents on her plate. She pats her stomach. "It appears that way." When her shirt was sticking to her skin in the shower, I noted the definition there. She's in very, very good shape. I drag my eyes back up, which means I'm looking at her chest for a second before I meet her eyes. "Did you leave room for dessert?" It comes out heavy-sounding and a little raspy. Ruby's eyes flare and then her lids lower, so does her voice. "Dessert?" "I always order dessert when I get takeout from this place. It's in the fridge." "Oh, right. I might need a little time for my stomach to settle before I can put anything else in there. She rubs it a few times for emphasis. I try to keep my eyes in safe zones away from her chest. She clears her throat. Now that we're cleaned and fed, should we go through the house rules? Right, of course. Hold on. I push away from the table and cross the kitchen to retrieve the binder I put together. Since I'm away for such an extended period, I wanted to make sure I cover all possible scenarios. Wow, you have a binder? Ruby looks like she's trying not to laugh. There are a lot of things that need to be covered. Uh-huh. Your tone implies you think this is excessive. She takes the binder from me and opens it. How many pages is this? More than 100? It's 98. Francesca and Tiny have very specific needs. 98 pages of needs. She leafs through it and mutters, I wish someone was this in tune to my needs. I bite my tongue and say nothing about how I'm sure I could attend to every single damn one of them if she'd like to go back to my bedroom and play hide-and-seek in my sheets with me. It's not all about Tiny and Francesca. It also contains codes, passwords, fire safety, where to locate things, how to use various technological equipment, public transit information, areas to avoid, that kind of thing. Is there a section on how to make the bed? Do you have a diagram for hospital corners? I trust in your ability to make your bed however you see fit. She stops flipping, jabbing her finger at the page. You have instructions on how to use the washer and dryer. This is coming from someone who got stuck in the shower because she couldn't figure out how to adjust the temperature or work the jets. Besides, they can be difficult to figure out. It took me 3 loads to get what was going on at first. I'm more of a visual learner. Why don't you show me all this stuff? Do you have a checklist, maybe a star chart? I can have dessert when I earn 5 stars. Her eyes light up with the same mischief I caught a glimpse of when she was playing with Francesca on my bed. I spend the next hour going over everything in the house, from where to dispose of the garbage to how to use the TV remote, to where to find Francesca and Tiny's food. Ruby appears as if she's paying close attention. When she has a question, she puts her hand on my arm and looks up at me with wide, inquisitive eyes. I'm in the middle of showing her where to find the pots and pans should she want to cook when she walks away from me. What is this? She taps the table across from Tiny's terrarium. It's an answering machine. What year is it from, 1980? She's probably pretty close. It even has the mini cassette tape. She appears flabbergasted. You have a cell phone, don't you?
I do.
Then why do you have this? Ruby picks it up and it takes everything in me not to freak out and tear it out of her hands. Instead, I gently pry the machine away from her and set it carefully back on the table, brushing away any dust or fingerprints. It's nostalgic. Because you were born at the end of the decade? She's sort of poking fun, but her voice is soft and she seems more curious now than anything. It was my grandmother's. She'd had it forever. The tapes were so hard to find, so I figured I would try to teach her how to use the cell phone. She kept saying no, and I kept trying to persuade her. Did you? I nod. I told her we could play poker against each other all the time, and she was sold. Ruby laughs. She's a card shark? She was. It sounds like you're close. We were. She passed away last year. I'd been away at the time and almost missed the funeral, much like I'd missed a lot of things relating to my family. That's why I'm glad to be back in New York. I'm so sorry. Ruby reaches out and puts her hand on my arm, giving it a soft squeeze. Me too. She was a great woman. She was the mastermind behind the whole hotel empire, although my grandfather took all the glory for that. Anyway, when we were cleaning out her place, I found the answering machine and took it. It was one of those things. I should probably get rid of it, but I think it's sweet. Hardly anyone calls me on that line. My mother sometimes does. There's a manual in here if you run into issues. I tap her hip and she shifts to the side. I open the drawer and show her the dog-eared manual in the Ziploc bag. Her nose crinkles. Maybe I'll just leave this one alone. I lean against the counter behind me. That's probably best, and if there are any real issues, you can always call, text, or email. It might be easier than going through this. She pats the binder tucked under her arm. Unless there's an appendix and a quick reference guide. When I say nothing, she moves to stand beside me, her arm brushing mine as she sets the binder on the counter and flips to the back page, where there is, indeed, a quick reference guide, but only for the most major of potential issues, such as Francesca getting ill or the fire alarm going off in my condo, both of which I sincerely hope don't happen.
Wow, you're, super organized, aren't you?
I shrug. I just like to be prepared. She shifts, angling her body toward me. I'm quite a bit taller than she is, so I get a nice peek at her cleavage.
Were you a Boy Scout?
I spent a few years in cadets.
Ah, so you're very disciplined then.
I guess. I suppose in some ways I am. As an athlete, I had to constantly push myself, especially when I was injured.
Does that mean in addition to being organized, you're a rule follower?
It depends, I suppose.
On what?
Whether I like the rule or not. She laughs.
So you'd just like to enforce them, not follow?
Something like that. Ruby pinches the sleeve of my t-shirt between two fingers and lifts it until she reaches the edge of my tattoo.
This seems pretty anti-rule to me.
It's hardly anti-rule anymore. Everyone has tattoos these days.
I don't.
I bet you've thought about getting one, though. I imagine it would be something small, not like mine. Ruby shrugs.
If I did, it would have to be somewhere I could hide it.
Like your hip? I tap the spot with a finger, then quickly retract my hand when she jumps a little.
I guess, and then what's the point of wearing art if no one else gets to see it?
You'd see it every day, and I'm sure someone would get to see it eventually. But only when I'm wearing a bikini, or maybe not even then. Or when you're naked. I supply. Ruby leans in a little closer until her chest is an inch from mine. She has to tip her chin up in order to maintain eye contact. If I didn't have a better handle on my hormones, I might be tempted to lean down and kiss her, but my dick is not in control of my brain right now, mostly. Her voice comes out low and sultry.
You realize this is the second time you've referenced me being naked since I've been here.
Are you keeping track? She fingers the strap of her tank.
I'm just noting your apparent obsession with me being naked.
I'm just providing helpful suggestions. You're the one making it about nudity. She scoffs and backs up a step, which is unfortunate. I could have sworn I felt her nipples brush my chest a second ago. Or maybe that's wishful thinking on my part. It's not as if I'm going to say no to her if she happens to make a move. I just don't think I should be the one to make the move, being that I assaulted her in a hallway and just moved her into my condo.
You're putting an awful lot of thought into a tattoo I'm never going to get.
Never say never.
I hate needles, and I have no interest in letting someone I don't know put their hands that close to
your... I prompt. She ducks her head and mumbles,
my special place?
I laugh.
Your special place?
Shut it. She pushes on my chest and I grab her hand.
You can do better than that.
I should really stop because this is its own special brand of torment for my cock, and I really want to hear her say something dirty.
You mean like my hoo-ha? Lady garden? Love tunnel? Precious flower? Or do you mean slit?
She drags out the S, then runs her tongue across her bottom lip.
No, not slit. You're probably more of a pussy lover, aren't you?
Fucking right I am. Maybe I don't give a shit about complications. I'm still holding her wrist, and she's not making a move to get away. I bow my head, inches away from that sexy, naughty mouth. Her eyes lift to mine and her lips part. She wants this. Fuck it. I'm about to take it when my goddamn phone rings. It's enough to break the tension. Ruby steps back, eyes darting away, head dropping, as I mutter a curse and check the contact. It's my father. I have to take this.
Of course.
Her hand flutters to her throat and she gives me a nervous smile. I answer the call and walk across the room to the office, adjusting my hard-on, which has returned with a vengeance. I rubbed one out in the shower, but it looks like I'm going to have to do that again after I go to bed. My conversation with my father is brief and unnecessary as far as I'm concerned. When I return to the living room, I half expect her to have disappeared into her room for the night on account of my behavior. She hasn't. Instead, she's reclining in her dilapidated lounger, balancing a cup of tiramisu on her stomach. A second dessert sits on the coffee table in front of the couch. I assume it's for me.
I figured I earned all my stars so I was allowed to have dessert, but I waited for you just to make sure.
I get another one of her impish grins, which is a relief. I could have made things awkward if I'd let my dick take control again. You probably deserve both of these. I drop my phone on the coffee table beside my dessert and flop down on the couch. Sorry about that. Last minute pre-trip conversations.
Everything okay?
She asks. Yeah, my father likes to micromanage.
That seems to be a pretty common father trait, Ruby says.
Sounds like you're familiar with that.
There's a reason I'm here and he lives in Rhode Island. Well, one of the reasons, anyway.
She smiles and drops her gaze.
So you and Armstrong are pretty close.
It's an abrupt change of topic. Clearly talking about her father is as unpleasant for her as is talking about mine right now. We went to the same prep school. Our parents spent a lot of time with each other, so it sort of forced us together, if that makes sense. Armstrong and I are close in some respects, but he does a lot of things that irk me. If I had to work with him, I'd probably punch him in the face. Often. He's an overbearing prick at the best of times. Ruby cocks her head to the side like she's seeking the deeper meaning in my tone.
Are you in the wedding party?
I am. So are you, aren't you?
I'm Amy's maid of honor. I'm surprised I didn't meet you at the engagement party before the, bathroom run-in.
I was tucked away in a corner, not feeling all that well most of the evening. I guess we'll be spending a lot of time together when the wedding plans get underway.
That we will.
Now it's my turn to assess her tone. You don't seem all that excited.
About the wedding?
Ruby lifts one shoulder.
It's just really fast. I mean, I guess when you know, but Amy has never been one to jump into things, well, not this kind of thing, so this feels a little rushed.
Armstrong is an intense person. When he sees something he wants, he goes after it, not always considering the rashness of his actions. In the past, it's created some conflict, particularly with my brother Lexington, as they often seem to have an affinity for the same type of women. My other brother Griffin is the only one of the three of us with a stable relationship history. But then he's the oldest, so that makes sense, I suppose.
You've told Amelie this?
Her expression becomes incredulous.
Of course not. I'm not going to rain on her parade. I'm probably just being overprotective. We've been friends for a long time. I just want her to be happy.
And you think she is?
She seems that way.
But I prompt.
But nothing, I guess. I'll support her no matter what, even if dealing with Armstrong's mother is going to give me an ulcer.
I laugh. Gwendolyn can be challenging.
Any tips you might have would be greatly appreciated.
Don't let her smell your fear. Ruby snorts.
Awesome, thanks. So she's exactly like a tarantula.
She dips her spoon into her dessert and daintily brings it to her mouth, full lips parting. She moans her appreciation.
This is ridiculously delicious.
They have the best desserts.
I'd forego the actual dinner part and just order 6 of these next time.
She digs her spoon in and takes a much larger, more decadent bite. Her head falls back and her eyes drift close.
Seriously, Bancroft, this is amazing.
I'm a big fan of the way my name sounds coming out of her mouth. Apparently so is my dick, since he's trying to give her a wave from inside my shorts. That reprieve didn't last very long. I'll leave the takeout menu for you.
I may eat nothing else for the next 5 weeks if you do that.
When she's halfway through her dessert, she sighs and lifts her gaze. I haven't been eating my own, more than entertained watching her. So you said no boyfriend, right? You're not even casually dating anyone? She stops with her spoon halfway to her mouth.
What?
Shit. That's not a random question I can just throw out there without having a reason for asking it. I flounder for a second, trying to come up with something that makes sense. Or friends you plan to entertain while you're here?
Just Amy, I guess. And of course, the 200 people I invited to the kegger tomorrow.
She wags her eyebrows. I tap my spoon on the edge of my dessert and give her a rueful smile in return.
Right, can't forget that.
She regards me speculatively.
Would you prefer it if I don't have guests?
If they're male, yes, I definitely prefer she doesn't have them here. But I'm not about to say that aloud. That makes me sound like a territorial asshole, which I have no right to be. No, it's fine. But I'd prefer you don't give out the entry code.
Of course not. I won't leave any strays unattended.
Her grin is impish.
Is there anyone who has the code who might pop by other than the cleaning lady?
Just my brothers and immediate family, but they don't have a reason to stop by if I'm not here. She taps the arm of her chair and regards me for a few seconds.
So that woman you were with at the engagement party, I'm guessing she's not your girlfriend or anything? I don't need to worry about her freaking out because another woman is living in your condo?
You mean Brittany? No, she's definitely not my girlfriend.
Good to know.
With all the travel, a girlfriend hasn't been all that practical. She cocks her head.
What do you mean?
When I played professional rugby, I was on the road a lot, and now it seems like I'll be on the road more than I anticipated, at least for a while. It makes it difficult to get involved.
Ah, I understand. Theater is challenging like that, too. The hours are odd since performances are typically in the evenings and on the weekends. Unless you're dating another actor, it's not very practical.
She dips her spoon in her dessert again.
So that Brittany chick was just meant to be a hookup then?
I'm sure Brittany would have been good with the hookup part, but I don't mention that to Ruby.
I went out with her as a favor.
She grimaces.
Wow, that's some favor.
She's not that bad. I'm not sure why I'm defending Brittany other than it seems to irritate Ruby.
She called me a slut.
Well, you were kissing me, so. I have to bite back the smile at her incredulity. She points her spoon at me, her annoyance clear.
You kissed me.
I shift an arm behind my head. You didn't put up much of a fight. Her mouth drops open and snaps shut just as quickly. It's the same reaction I got out of her the other day when I brought the same thing up at the restaurant. Her eyes narrow into slits. I bet she's a real firecracker when she's angry. I sort of want to push her buttons just to see what happens when she goes off. I bet angry fucking with her would be incredible. I wonder if she's a hair puller or a biter or a scratcher. Wow, that got dirty fast. She narrows her eyes.
We are not talking about this.
About you kissing me back? I wasn't going to bring it up, but now that we're on the subject.
Consider it unbrought up.
Her cheeks flush. I can't help myself. I keep pushing. No way. You as much as admitted that you kissed me back right there. You opened the door. I'm walking through it. Why would you kiss a complete stranger?
I said I wasn't talking about this.
The pink in her cheeks rises to the tips of her ears. This is way too much fun. She's got one hell of an angry glare going on. I'm leaving you in my house for more than a month, alone. I need to be certain you have sound judgment.
I'll have you know my judgment is usually very sound. However, when an incredibly attractive man surprises me with his tongue in my mouth, the most logical response is to kiss back.
You think I'm incredibly attractive? She rolls her eyes.
Of course, that's the part you choose to focus on. You see yourself in the mirror every day. You can't tell me you don't know you're nice to look at. I'm just stating a fact.
My ego inflates a little at this. I know I'm not unattractive, but my nose has been broken a couple of times, and there's a bump I can't ever get rid of without plastic surgery. I've had knee surgery, and I'm not great under anesthetic, so I'd prefer to avoid that scenario. I also have a few small facial scars from playing rugby all those years, which, in the environment I grew up in, takes me down a few points on the desirability scale. Not that I give a fuck. It's my mother who seems to be worried about it, as she does about every line and gray hair. It's a blessing I don't have any sisters. I see. So you're telling me if any incredibly attractive man did what I did, you'd respond the exact same way?
Now you're generalizing. It's circumstantial.
What do you mean by circumstantial?
Well, I guess I assumed you had to be a guest at the engagement party.
So that made it okay to kiss a stranger, because we were attending the same event? She pauses with her spoon at her lips.
That's not what I said.
It sounds like that's what you're implying. That spoon slips into her mouth and she licks it clean before she responds. The entire time I'm thinking increasingly dirty thoughts about that tongue of hers. She flounders a little.
It's not like I was at some seedy bar with seedy douches. It was an engagement party.
So that makes me better somehow.
Are you always this antagonistic?
She throws up her hands.
You kissed me. You smelled good and you're good with your tongue, so I went with it. Stop judging me.
I'm not judging, I'm just asking. So on top of being incredibly attractive and smelling good, I'm also an excellent kisser.
I never said excellent, you added your own adjective. And if you keep talking about how attractive you are, you'll go from a 10 to a 9 pretty fast.
Oh, so I'm a 10?
You were an 11 before you started pushing this angle. That last question puts you at an 8.5.
I guess I should change the subject before I'm in the negative.
You just earned back half a point.
Maybe I should stop while I'm ahead or less behind anyway.
Good plan.
She leans over and grabs the remote to turn on the TV. I guess that conversation is over. For now. We finish our dessert in silence. Not uncomfortable silence, but there's weight in it. Every so often I look over at Ruby, thinking I feel her looking at me. But maybe it's just in my head. Or maybe I'm looking for a reason to keep baiting her. The next time I look over, her eyes are closed. Her legs are still hanging off the edge of the chair, but she's slouched down and her head looks like it's at an uncomfortable angle. If she stays like that too long, her neck is going to be sore. The tiramisu container is empty and resting against her thighs, right over a different kind of dessert I'd like to try. She's still holding the spoon and there's a smear on her tank. She must be exhausted and still recovering from that flu bug I passed on to her. Ruby? She makes a little noise and shifts around, her brow furrowing as she tries to get comfortable, but can't because of the limited amount of room she has to maneuver. I turn off the TV, aware I need to go to bed so I can manage my early morning flight. I have hours of work to accomplish on the plane. I push up from the couch, pluck the empty container from her lap, and slip the spoon out from her fist. Her hands immediately smooth down her stomach and nestle between her legs as she tries to roll to the side. I'd like to get my hands between her legs, among other parts of my body. Not while she's sleeping, obviously. That would just make me a creepy douche. I shake her shoulder. Ruby. Her eyes pop open and she blinks blearily, confusion knitting her brows together as she looks at me and then at her surroundings. You fell asleep.
Oh.
She glances down at her hands tucked between her legs and pulls them free. It takes her a moment to get her bearings. She stretches, arms going over her head, chest pushing out as she stands. Her tank rides up, exposing toned abs and, wait, is that a belly ring? How did I miss that before now? There's definitely a streak of rebellion in this one. She shuffles across the floor, a shiver running up her spine, and goosebumps break across her arms. Her shorts are askew, half of one butt cheek on display again. She has a tiny mole on the right one. Not that I'm looking that closely or anything. I toss the empty containers in the trash and drop the spoons in the sink. Ruby stands half in, half out of her temporary room.
What time do you leave in the morning?
Her voice is raspy with sleep. Early, before 6. Her nose scrunches up.
Yuck, that's an awful time to be awake.
It's pretty typical for me.
Sometimes that's when I go to bed.
Partying hard?
Just a night hawk. Productions tend to be in the evening. It makes my schedule a little unconventional when I have a role.
She leans her head against the door jamb.
I don't think sleeping is going to be a problem tonight, though.
She stifles a yawn.
Well, I guess I'll see you in 5 weeks.
I'll check in once I'm settled.
Great.
We stare at each other for a few long seconds, and then she takes a tentative step forward.
Thanks again for trusting me to take care of your babies.
Suddenly her body is flush against mine as her arms come around my waist. I barely have enough time to return the hug before she releases me and steps away, eyes darting down as her cheeks flush pink. I'm glad it worked out for both of us.
Me too.
She bites her lip, her gaze shifting to me.
Have a safe trip, Bancroft. Good night.
Night. She gives me a small smile, slips into her room, and closes the door. I head to mine so I can take care of the issue that's been plaguing me all night before I catch a few hours of sleep, and then leave this woman in my home for 5 weeks while I learn how to manage hotel properties.
Chapter 8 Bon Voyage Ruby Noise wakes me at 5:36 in the morning. takes me a few seconds to orient myself to the unfamiliar surroundings. I'm not used to the mostly quiet, so the footsteps and the sound of a suitcase being wheeled down the hall seem louder than they probably are. Bancroft must be leaving for the airport. We said goodbye last night, but I'm suddenly very awake and alert. I won't see him for 5 weeks. I stare at the ceiling while I listen to him tooling around in the kitchen, trying to decide if I should get up and say goodbye again or stay where I am. My vagina decides for me. She wants a visual hit of Bancroft before he leaves for the next month. I throw off the covers and tiptoe to the bathroom, blind myself with the light, and check myself out in the mirror. My hair's pretty screwed, and I have puffy sleep eyes, but otherwise I'm fine. Well, fine-ish. I rinse with mouthwash and finger comb my hair so it doesn't look like I'm trying too hard, but I also don't look like a troll, either. I clear my throat and find it doesn't hurt anymore, and my stomach actually rumbles. Opening my bedroom door a crack, I peek out. Light filters down from the kitchen. I shiver as I walk down the hall, the hardwood floor cool beneath my feet. I'm definitely not accustomed to the air conditioning. 2 black suitcases come into view as I approach the foyer. And then there's Bancroft. Holy sweet mother of one-hand clapping material, is this man ever not hot? He's standing at the kitchen counter, writing something on a piece of paper, dressed in a black suit, complete with jacket and tie. His broad shoulders and narrow waist make it look absolutely fantastic. His hair is styled, the dark curls tamed with some sort of product. I want to run my fingers through it and mess it up. He's freshly shaven, unlike last night, and completely put together. Hey. My voice comes out all gravelly, possibly from sleep. Possibly because I'm thinking about how fun it would be to peel that suit off him with my teeth and get to all the good stuff underneath. His head jerks, and he glances up to where I'm standing at the edge of the hallway, half in the dark. I step into the foyer, and his eyes flare, sweeping over me.
I didn't mean to wake you.
His voice matches mine in rasp. He reaches up and adjusts his tie. His hand smooths over the shock of electric blue fabric. I follow the movement, watching as he fastens the buttons of his jacket. He was dressed similarly at the engagement party, but I didn't have an opportunity to appreciate it the way I can now. I've been staring, and he's said words. I'm also biting my knuckle. I release it from my teeth. Don't worry about it. I'm used to hearing traffic, so the silence is going to take some time to get used to. His eyes keep darting down and then back up to my face. They seem to stay down longer and longer each time. I follow his gaze, trying to figure out what the deal is when I realize that my current attire isn't all that appropriate. I'm wearing a white tank, which isn't a problem. It covers all my important parts, aside from my perky nipples. What I didn't take into consideration was the fact that my bottom half is covered only by a pair of underwear. At least they're full coverage. They also happen to be lacy, since they were the only pair I could find in my semi-sleepy haze last night. I've worn less during dance competitions, but contextually, this isn't awesome. Or maybe it is, considering the way he doesn't seem to be able to maintain eye contact any better than me. Oh! I drop my hands and cover my crotch, as if that's going to help. I'll be right back. Bancroft's eyebrows climb a little, and a half smile appears as I turn and rush down the hall, with my hand shielding my ass.
"Don't feel compelled to put more clothes on for my benefit,"
he calls after me. I grab my kimono from the back of the bathroom door, one of the very few items I unpacked last night before I passed out, and shrug it on. On the plus side, my cheeks now match the color of the flowers decorating my robe, so at least I'm coordinated. I return to the kitchen, where Bancroft is now sipping a cup of coffee. He regards me over the rim of his cup, his amusement apparent in the arch of his brow. "Sorry about that. I've been living alone for a long time."
"No need to apologize. Your wardrobe choices are your own." "I'm certainly not going to complain."
He's wearing a devilish smirk as he gives me another lingering once over. I prop a hip against the counter and cross my arms over my chest. "Hasn't anyone ever told you it's not polite to ogle?" His gaze lifts to mine, and he leans in close, voice dropping to a whisper as if he's about to tell me a secret.
"I'm not always polite."
Oh, God. I'd like to experience his not polite all over this condo. Right here on the kitchen island would be a good place to start. I go with Snark rather than offering to be his breakfast. "You're going to drop below a 9 again if you keep it up." That sexy smile of his widens.
"I guess it's good that I'm leaving. I hate to bring myself down to a lowly 8.5 again."
I'm first to break the stare down. "What's this?" I motion to the scribbled notes on the counter. There are also a couple of envelopes. The one on top has my name on it, but the notes are first to grab my attention. "Isn't the 100-page care manual enough?" He blushes a little.
"It's just a few things I forgot to tell you, and we didn't discuss payment."
"Payment? For what?"
"For taking care of Francesca and Tiny."
"You're giving me a place to live and free groceries."
"You'll have other expenses. You need a stipend. Will 2 a week be enough? I've left a little cash to start."
He taps the envelope.
"I'll get bank details from you later."
"Sure, that sounds reasonable. 200 a week, on top of having a place to live and food already taken care of, will definitely make things manageable while I look for a job." I pick up the pages. The writing is nearly illegible. I'm supposed to be able to read this? What is it? Hieroglyphics?
"My writing isn't that bad."
"Is that what your mom told you when you were in grade school?"
"I'll just email you later."
He tries to grab the notes from me, but I hide them behind my back. It pushes my chest out, drawing his attention there. "It's fine. I'll just do some internet research later on runes. It'll be like one of those hidden message puzzles." He opens his mouth, likely to shoot back another barb at me, but his phone rings. He pats his pockets and locates the device.
"I have to get this."
He answers the call.
"Bancroft Mills speaking."
A short pause follows.
"I'll be right down."
Once he ends the call, he pockets his phone again.
"It's my car for the airport."
He gives me another lingering stare, and it could be in my head, but he looks like he's not at all that excited about leaving at the moment. "Have a safe trip. I promise I'll take great care of Francesca and Tiny while you're gone."
"I'm sure you will. I'll send a message when I land, and I'll check in later in the week."
"Okay." We stand there for a few seconds, staring at each other, neither one of us making any kind of move. I'm half a second away from making a colossally bad decision by grabbing him by the lapels of his suit jacket and dragging those luscious lips of his down to mine, when he looks away and clears his throat. It's enough to break me out of my fantasizing.
Okay, I have to go.
He said that already. He brings a hand up to his hair, but drops it, pats his pockets, then crosses to his bags. I'll get the door for you. I rush ahead of him, flip the lock, and hold it open. He pauses at the threshold. He looks like he wants to say something. I promise they'll be fine with me. We can always video chat if you miss them.
Yeah. Okay. That might be good.
I'm a hugger. I've always been a hugger. Usually in my world, you're allowed to do the air kiss back pat. So it's on impulse, and maybe a small hormonal component, that I lean in toward him. I realize too late that my reflexive action isn't the best idea, and that I've shocked him.
Oh, okay,
he mumbles as my face hits his chest and my arm comes around his waist. I'm about to release him when he returns the embrace, his thick arms wrapping around me. God, he's solid. And he smells incredible. Like warm laundry with a hint of cologne. His arms tighten, and his head drops. His freshly shaved cheek brushes against my temple. The press of his palm against my low back has me tilting my pelvis just the tiniest little bit. I both hear and feel his heavy exhalation against my cheek. And then his other hand is smoothing up my back, between my shoulder blades, under my hair. It makes me want to follow through on the lapel grabbing and lip locking. I stop breathing when his fingertips brush over the back of my neck and his lips touch my ear. I suck in a gasping breath when the hand pressed against the dip in my spine eases just a bit lower. I was managing just fine before the fucking lace panties. He murmurs. The sound of another door opening and the yippy bark of a dog has us awkwardly shoving away from each other.
Bancroft!
The heavy accent belongs to a woman wearing more makeup than a circus clown. I have no idea how old she is or whether she's related to humans or aliens based on the amount of cosmetic surgery she's likely had to achieve the false, youthful look she's sporting. A tiny dog jumps around her feet, yipping and nipping. It tries to make a run for Bancroft's door, but Clown Woman yanks on the leash.
No, Precious, sit!
Precious doesn't sit. In fact, Precious growls and snaps at Bancroft. The woman snatches Precious up into her arms, chastising and then cooing.
Hello, Miss Blackwood. Hello, Precious. You're up early today.
Bancroft's smile is as tight as Clown Woman's skin as he takes a small but obvious step away from me, creating more distance. He also shoves his hands in his pockets, possibly doing some rearranging. I bite the inside of my lip to keep from smiling too wide.
I'm off for a week at the spa.
The spa must be a highbrow code for a visit to the plastic surgeon, or rehab. I'm guessing it's the former rather than the latter. Miss Blackwood's gaze travels over Bancroft, and then slides to me.
Who is this you're hiding?
Bancroft's cheek ticks, as if he's trying to keep his smile from dropping. He looks just as annoyed as I feel.
This is Ruby Scott. She'll be taking care of my place while I'm away on business.
Oh?
She gives me a speculative look.
Is she a friend of yours, then?
She is.
Well, isn't that nice? Welcome to the building, Miss Scott, is it?
She holds out her wrinkly old hand. The one that in no way matches the stretched, wrinkleless skin on her face. I hold the top of my robe closed with one hand and take her offered palm with the other. It's nice to meet you, Miss Blackwood.
Yes, of course. Are you enjoying the accommodation so far?
If she wasn't pushing 80, I'd be worried about the look she's giving Bancroft. I'm not sure what's going on here, but there seems to be some kind of weird tension between them. Oh, yes. I turn a warm smile on Bancroft and bat my lashes. Bancroft is an incredibly accommodating, attentive host. The tick in his cheek is back. Except this time he's working to keep his smile from growing too wide. There's got to be a story with Miss Blackwood.
All right. Enjoy your time at the spa.
I fake a yawn and smile brightly at Bancroft. Have a great trip. I think I'll just go back to bed since you kept me up so late and woke me up so early. Call when you're all settled. I drop a quick kiss on his cheek and step out of reach. Miss Blackwood looks scandalized, and Bancroft looks like he wants to rip my kimono off and maybe spank me. Okay, the last part is just me fantasizing. I'm going to take that back to bed with me. I give them both a jaunty wave. Bye, Bancroft. Bye, Miss Blackwood. I close the door on her horrified face and lock it, then peek through the peephole. Bancroft looks over his shoulder once before disappearing down the hall to the elevators. 5 weeks of phone flirting with Bancroft might just kill me, and if it does, it's going to be the sweetest death. Chapter 9. Phone Calls. Ruby. I go back to bed, give myself an orgasm while thinking about Bancroft, and promptly fall back to sleep. I don't get up until 2 in the afternoon. And the only reason I roll my lazy butt out of bed is because my bladder forces me to. That mattress is like sleeping on a cloud. Once I've taken care of my bathroom needs, I make a trip down the hall to Bancroft's room. The door is ajar. His bed is made this time, although it's clear it was a hastily done job. The covers are wrinkly and uneven. I have the urge to smooth them out. While I've never been the best at keeping things organized and tidy, I've always made my bed. Even as a child, when there was a housekeeper to take care of that kind of thing, I was the one who made it. There's just something comforting about slipping into a neatly made bed. Hi, Franny, I say when she peeks her head out of the tube. She makes a little noise and runs back and forth across the cage as I undo the latch. She stretches up on her hind legs, eager to be free, as I open the hatch. I pet her head and lift her out. She cuddles into me for a few seconds, then pushes away, clearly wanting the freedom to roam. My stomach growls as I wander down the hall after her. I think I might actually be able to handle coffee for the first time since Bancroft made me sick. I find all the components for coffee and reheat some of the leftovers from last night, watching them whirl around in Bancroft's space-age microwave. Like everything else in Bancroft's condo, all of his appliances are top of the line, which means they have 7 million functions and buttons to press. After I scarf down my food, I take a coffee and Francesca to my room, closing the door so I can keep an eye on her while I go through the boxes. I'm grateful that Amy helped, because she labels everything. The only stuff I really need while I'm here is clothing and toiletries. I check to make sure Francesca hasn't burrowed under the covers before I set my massive, heavy suitcase on the bed and begin the process of transferring items into the dresser. Francesca climbs into the drawer and sticks her head through a pair of underwear. Her nails get caught in the lace waistband, so she frolics around in there, getting herself tangled up. I grab my phone and snap a picture, then send it to Bancroft without really thinking about what exactly she's gotten herself tangled in. I don't hear back from him right away. I assume he may still be traveling since he's headed to the UK. So I get to stew in my own idiocy while I put away the rest of my clothes and move on to my toiletries. At least they're my nice undies. I'm careful about making sure all the chemical products are well out of the way and that anything with a cord is behind a closed door. Once I've done the bulk of my unpacking, I return Francesca to Bancroft's room, play a little hide-and-seek with her under the covers, making a mess of his hastily made bed until she tires out and wants to nap. She curls into a ball, puts her little head down, and falls asleep while I pet her. I can totally understand why he couldn't bear to let Animal Control have her. She's adorable. At that point, I return her to her cage so I can snoop around Bancroft's bedroom. His bathroom is amazing, with a huge soaker tub and a shower twice as big as the one in my room with twice as many jets. As far as man bathrooms are concerned, it's not too disgusting. The toilet seat is down, which is a bonus. There's a blue towel half hanging out of the laundry hamper and another draped haphazardly over the towel rack. I leave his room for another more detailed tour of Bancroft's condo. Last night I was mostly paying attention to his biceps and his butt and all the other nice parts of him. On my way to get a better look at the home gym, I stop to check on Tiny. She's sitting right beside her water dish, which I need to change. I follow the instructions in the binder and refill the dish. Since she's eaten recently, I won't need to feed her a cricket for several more days. She's definitely going to be the easier of the two pets to take care of. One detail I missed about his gym, and I'm not actually sure how, is the life-sized photograph of Bancroft hanging from the wall. Apparently, he was the poster boy for the rugby championship a few years ago. The picture is an action shot of him mid-kick. Holy sweet thighs. Holy sweet everything. The only thing that would make the picture better would be if he were shirtless. His face glistens with sweat, which should be unattractive, but isn't. His hair curls around his neck and sticks to his forehead. Every muscle in his body seems to be flexed with exertion. I wonder if I can take this off the wall and bring it into my bedroom. I check the edges and pull on the corner of the frame, but it doesn't budge. Too bad. My phone rings from somewhere in the condo, three bars of the same catchy tune repeating as I search for the location of the noise. The nice thing about living in a studio apartment is not having a lot of ground to cover when things go missing. Bancroft's condo has to be somewhere around 2,000 sprawling feet of living space, which means there are significantly more potential locations for items to get lost in. I'm notorious for leaving my phone in strange places, like the fridge. The sound isn't muffled enough for it to be there, though. I miss the call, but find my phone in Bancroft's room, on his bed. Excitement makes my toes tingle at the possibility that it might be him checking in. I have no idea how long his flight was, although I think that information might be in the binder. I have a message, but it's not from Bancroft. It's from Amy. I call her back without listening to the message. I'm sent directly to voicemail, though, so I try again, but the same thing happens. I text her, telling her to stop calling so I can call her. Half a second later, she sends me the same message. I laugh and wait for 2 minutes, wondering when the standoff will end. I get a question mark, so I cave and call. "I've been thinking about you all day," Amy says by way of greeting. I flop down on Bancroft's bed. "Does Armstrong know you're fantasizing about me? I won't tell him if you don't." She snorts delicately. "Obviously, you're feeling better if you're making dirty jokes again." "Much, actually. I slept forever last night. Bancroft has the comfiest bed." I've left the pillow behind my head, settling in.
"What? You slept with Bane?"
Amy's voice is so shrill it sounds like a fire alarm. I realize the error and bark out a laugh. I mean the bed in his spare room, not his bed.
Oh, I was going to say, it's not really like you to just fall into bed with someone. Except that one time.
And we're never, ever going to speak of that again.
I saw Drew recently.
Did you miss the part about never again?
I briefly dated Drew McMaster in the second year of college. And by briefly, I mean that we went on one damn date. He was an excellent flirt, and after several weeks of persistence on his part, I agreed to go out with him. I mistakenly fell for all of his lines and ended up in his bed. It was a lackluster experience at best. He spent the entire 2 minutes thrusting like a jackhammer was attached to his hips. At least he came. I didn't even get close. And his penis was incredibly subpar. I don't even think it was average. That was the last date I went on with him. After that, I made sure not to get naked or even close to naked with someone on the first date. If a guy is worth it, he can wait to experience the wonders inside my panties. That way, I have a sufficient number of dates in which to engage in some makeout sessions. Foreplay is an art. If a guy sucks at that, he's probably going to suck in the sack. Although, if I had met Bancroft and wasn't dependent on him, I wouldn't say no to climbing into his bed, regardless of the rule. I bet he's incredible between the sheets, especially with those powerful thighs of his.
Well, I wouldn't have brought it up because I know it gives you nightmares, but I thought you might like to know that he started balding.
He's only 26.
Exactly.
It's horrible how happy this makes me, I reply.
It's not horrible. It's justified. He was a jerk.
He really was. Speaking of jerks,
how was dinner with Armstrong's parents?
It was fine.
Good.
It was good.
The way her voice raises to a pitch reserved for bird calls tells me she's lying.
Amy.
His mother's a bit cold.
That's an understatement. She's about as warm as a freezer, at least from what I experienced at the engagement party.
I'm sure she'll warm up to you. Everyone loves you.
How about his dad? Is he any better? I met him only in passing, a handshake and a brief introduction.
Frederick is lovely. He's been so pleasant with me. I don't actually understand how someone so nice can be married to such an ice queen.
Maybe she lets him in the back door.
Ruby!
Her shock turns to laughter.
Men will tolerate a lot for anal.
Amy snickers.
I think she already has something stuck up there. There probably isn't room for anything else.
This is the Amy I know. The one I love, who can have dirty conversations with me, not the one who has to look over her shoulder when the word vagina is spoken.
Okay, let's not talk about my future mother-in-law's sexual habits anymore. I have to see her for lunch this week, and I don't want to be thinking about where Frederick puts what.
How are you settling in? How was Bane last night?
I'm settling in fine. He seems really nice.
Very organized.
I don't tell her about the shower incident or hugging him both last night and this morning and how it got a little awkward there with his neighbor or how it seemed as if he was going to kiss me this morning before Miss Blackwood interrupted.
Armstrong said he can be a little intense.
He's always been nice to me, but then I've only met him a few times.
Armstrong says he's a bit rough around the edges.
I imagine his career as a rugby player might make him less pickle up the ass than what Armstrong is used to. I remember his comment from this morning, when he said he wasn't always polite. That, combined with the ass grab and the bit about my lace panties, sends the ghost of a shiver down my spine. I'd like his rough edges to rub all over mine. Especially the rough edge of his stubbly jaw
on my vagina. I need to back the horny bus up. At least until I'm off the phone with Amy. He was well enough mannered for me, which is almost unfortunate since I already know he's an amazing kisser. My phone buzzes against my cheek, and I check the screen, which means I don't hear most of Amy's reply. I have a new text. From Bancroft. Speak of the kissable devil. I put Amy on speakerphone so I can check the message. Meet Armstrong's friends. Sorry, I missed that. Who am I meeting? There's a party next Friday night. You should come. I can introduce you to some of Armstrong's friends you didn't get to meet at the engagement party. It'll be casual. Yeah, I don't know about that. Is it going to be all coupley? You're not going to try and set me up with one of those guys, are you? Amy sometimes likes to play matchmaker. She was especially fond of setting me up with her boyfriend's friends in high school. It was rarely successful. No setup, I promise. Although he does have a few cute friends. I'll go, but cute or not, I'm not dating anyone in your new inner circle. As much as I love spending time with Amy, whenever I go to one of her parties, I feel like I'm interviewing for the position of a stand-in wife or a mistress. The older men, the ones who have already succumbed to male pattern baldness, have a tendency to tout their bankroll stats between conversations about their sports cars and their property acquisitions or their stock market investments. The younger ones talk about their next big promotion and blah, blah, blah company and how much they love blowjobs in the bathrooms. That last part I'm making up, but none of them would say no if it was offered, not even the married ones. I finally managed to get Bancroft's message up. Bancroft, at the hotel, time for a call? Ruby, on the phone with Amy, give me two. I interrupt Amy, who's still talking about the party next weekend, to let her know Bancroft has arrived at his destination and wants to call. Oh, okay. Tell him I said hello. We'll talk tomorrow. Let's figure out when we can see each other this week. Okay. Sounds good. Thanks for all your help yesterday. We end the call, and a minute later my phone rings again, Bancroft's number appearing on the screen. I answer the call, my stomach flipping a little with excitement. Hello? The connection is full of static for a few seconds before the line clears.
Hello? Ruby?
Some men have great phone voices, the kind of voice that makes all the parts below the waist heat up. Bancroft Mills has that kind of voice, and he's only uttered two words. Hey, how was the flight? I sound all kinds of breathless for absolutely no reason other than his voice makes me want to have multiple orgasms.
It was long, but good. Am I catching you at a bad time?
I turn my face into his pillow and clear my throat before I answer. No, not at all.
Did you have a good day? How's everything going?
Obviously he's checking up on me to make sure I didn't kill his pets in the 12 hours he's been gone. I consider telling him I lost Francesca and that Tiny's escaped her habitat. But I don't think he'll find the humor in that. We had a great day. Francesca partied herself out this afternoon, and Tiny's in super chill mode.
Super chill mode?
Mm-hmm. She was having none of the partying. Francesca's a bit of a naughty girl, trying on all my thongs, taking naked selfies. Oh my God, what the hell am I saying? I expect at least 5 seconds of silence and an okay. Instead, I get a deep rumble of a laugh that ping-pongs around until it lands in my clit.
It's a good thing you weren't wearing those ones when you came out to say good morning.
Why is that?
I press my thighs together and wait.
Because my flight was already painful enough.
I'm not seeing how my choice of panties would impact your flight.
Jesus, is he saying what I think he's saying?
Do you have any idea how amazing your ass is? Or how long 7 hours would have felt with that image burned into my brain and no way to alleviate the issue?
I'm pretty sure Bancroft just told me he wants to whack off to images of me wearing a thong. Or maybe he just has. He clears his throat, but it doesn't do away with the gravelly sound or the pinging still going on in my clit.
Sorry. That was probably too much information.
Francesca's second favorite place to hang out is my underwear drawer, so I'm not surprised she took a liking to yours, too. I'm sure mine are a lot more exciting than yours.
From what I saw, that's definitely true.
Okay, I need to move this conversation away from my underwear before I need to change them or succumb to the urge to send him pictures of my panties while I'm wearing them. What time is it in England?
2 a.m. I need to think about getting some sleep, but I'm not sure it's going to happen. I have a meeting at 9, and I'm not the least bit tired.
When I can't sleep, I read the dictionary or 15th century literature.
Why would you do that?
Because it's so boring, it puts me to sleep. I get another laugh out of him.
Well, that's an idea.
It sounds like things are being shuffled around in the background.
What are your plans for the evening?
Well, I have that party starting in about an hour, so that should keep me busy tonight. I managed to cut the guest list down to 100, which is manageable, don't you think?
Much more manageable than the 200 you originally planned for.
I thought so, too.
You have the fire department on call?
The entire guest list is comprised of firefighters, so you don't have to worry about that. I get another laugh, although it's a little nervous sounding. So, what's the meeting for tomorrow?
I'm supposed to review the plans to upgrade some of the London hotels. We have 5 hotels here, and all but one are set to undergo some form of renovations. I'm here to oversee the projects with one of my older brothers.
You don't sound too excited about it.
Well, we're a lot alike in some ways, so it can be difficult to work with him. And I have to deal with him every day for the next 5 weeks. So there's that.
That sounds unpleasant.
Lexington likes to be in control of things, and he believes he knows everything.
Is that a family trait? I bite my lip to keep from laughing at his unimpressed noise.
Lex is far worse than me. If my father had sent Griffin along, this trip would be a lot easier.
So they both work for your father as well?
Straight out of college and into the hotel business.
Do you all look alike? Clones of Bancroft strolling the streets of Manhattan might be more hotness than this city could handle.
Not really.
That's unfortunate. I need to have a look around for family photos.
Lex doesn't have a great track record with dating, and Griffin has a girlfriend. I'm fairly certain he plans to propose this fall. So don't get any ideas over there.
There's a hint of genuine irritation in his voice, as if he doesn't appreciate my line of questioning. Calm down, I'm just playing with you.
Sorry, I'm snappy because I'm jet-lagged. And I'd rather be home, not spending the next 5 weeks here.
I understand where you're coming from. Being pushed into something you don't really want because you're out of other options, I mean.
Yes. Well, my rugby career wasn't going to last forever, so this was inevitable. Anyway, I'm being whiny. I need to stop that before I lose more points. I was down to 8.5 this morning, wasn't I?
It might take a while for you to earn that half point back.
That means I'll have to be on my best behavior then, doesn't it?
Well, I'm sure it's a lot easier to behave yourself from across the ocean.
You'd be surprised, he mutters. Hold on. Room service is here with my dinner.
I'm surprised they serve food at 2 a.m. But then maybe because his family owns the hotel, he gets whatever he wants, whenever he wants. I hear his muffled voice in the background, and then he's back again.
I don't know why I'm making you stay on the phone with me. I'm sure you have better things to do than listen to me eat.
Actually, I haven't eaten dinner yet, so I could heat something up and we could eat together.
Isn't it 9 there?
I slept in a little and had a late lunch. I don't mention getting up at 2 p.m. Not when he has been traveling all day. I put him on speakerphone while I prepare a plate of leftovers and stick it in the microwave.
What are you having?
He asks. I'm on to the chicken parm and spaghetti. I ate all the primavera this afternoon. What about you?
A burger and fries. It was pretty much the only option at this hour.
Once my meal is reheated, I take it over to the counter, grab a bottle of Perrier from the fridge, and drop onto a stool. So this traveling you're doing now, will you have to keep it up?
I twirl noodles onto my fork. Probably for a while, at least until my father thinks I have the basics down.
I guess it's good that you're used to it, then.
I don't mind the travel, but I feel like I've done enough of it over the last 7 years. It can be...
He pauses for a few seconds, searching for the right word.
Lonely, I guess. I miss so many birthdays and holidays with my family. I was looking forward to being able to spend more time with them, put down some more roots, I guess. But it seems like that will be delayed again.
You're close to your family, then?
They're important to me. My mother was sick a while back, and I wasn't there for that because of my job. There are some New York projects I'd like to be involved in, but it really depends on how quickly I pick things up, whether or not I'll get to work on them.
He sounds a little despondent. Is it a steep learning curve? I have no idea what the hotel business entails.
I have all the theory from school, but I haven't been actively using any of the things I learned in college for this purpose. It's a new application, if that makes any sense.
It does. So after you have the basics down, then you'll get to work out of New York?
Not strictly, but my hope is that I'll have the opportunity to manage some of the properties in the U.S., and travel will be limited.
And that's what you'd prefer?
I think so, yes. It's just a big transition. It'll take time to get used to suits instead of cleats.
That is a big change. I lean back, holding on to the edge of the island until I can see the giant, sweaty poster of him on the wall. If it's any consolation, you look just as good in a suit as you do in cleats.
9 out of 10 good?
It would have been if you hadn't asked that question. He laughs.
So, how does a Scot end up in New York, looking to get on Broadway? I thought you were all born with your times tables memorized.
I snort.